As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Freakonomics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martini.
Return of the Max, Return of the Max, Return of the Max. Been feeling very musical these last few episodes here lately, Remzo. By the way, welcome, Remzo Martinez. Welcome back to Second Comics. This is my co-host, as always, the rambunctious one himself, Remzo Martinez. What's happening, buddy?
You see, I'm not actually Remzo Martinez. I'm Remzo from another multiverse. This is why he had to go ahead and introduce me. Like, none of you fuckers know who I am.
I gotta give a little behind the scenes. We're recording this, you know, about a week or so, not even prior to the recording of prior to the airing of this episode, and we were discussing before the show, we're not going to talk about any of them, to be clear, because you probably do care about spoilers if you're listening. So we're
I respect everyone else's right to not be spoiled.
Right. You just don't respect your own, because I know Remzo was going to see Spider-Man tonight. I have already seen it, and then Remzo starts just rattling off all these things that happened in the movie because he just completely spoiled it for himself and saw
Reddit is a horrible place, Mark. Yeah. It's where dreams go to die.
So we're not going to talk about Spider-Man at all yet, because you still haven't seen it. So, you know, you don't know how you feel about how it played out, but you pretty much know everything that happens. But that's this weird thing about this world we live in. By the time this airs, yeah, I think it's okay. It'll be a week later to spoil Hawkeye. Like, for example, in Hawkeye, the Kingpin character just appeared in episode 5. And it has been rumored for so long this was going to happen. But it was something everybody kind of knew was going to happen. And did I spoil this for you, by the way?
No, I saw Hawkeye. So here's the statute of limitation on TV shows and movies. TV shows are 7 days. That's when it's universally acceptable to spoil everything publicly. For Spider-Man, they actually put out a date. Sony and Marvel actually said, don't start publicly talking about this shit until the 27th of December.
Really?
So a few days after this airs, a few days after Christmas, they're like, that's more than enough time
to determine when we can discuss things.
The people that want to go ahead and start posting more spoilers online to get people to go buy more tickets. Yeah. I'm going to see this movie twice easily in theaters.
Well. We already plan to go back. But like, I think there's just something to the innocence of not having any idea what's going on. And I think it's so hard, especially if you're comic nerds like us and you're all up on all the different, you know, websites and Twitter accounts and everything. It's really hard to avoid knowing this stuff. But even when the Kingpin appeared to me, like, it was awesome. I was excited for it. And I don't know. It's a kind of a two side thing, because was I more excited about Hawkeye because the Kingpin was coming? And for me, I was going to watch it either way, but maybe it drew interest for people that might not have otherwise watched it. Either way, I loved seeing it, but I did. There was a part of me that wished, like, I wish I had absolutely no idea that was going to happen, because then I would have been like, oh my God, the fucking Kingpin, and it's fucking Vincent D'Onofrio. Like, it would just, I would react so differently, you know.
You know, here's my philosophy when it comes to these things. I usually spoil really anticipated movies for myself, but it doesn't make me want to see them any less. If anything, if a movie is good, here's the true test of a spoiler ruins a movie. If you watch a movie and you forget about the spoilers and you're just totally like zoned into the film, you'll still be surprised as if you didn't know. That's kind of like how it was for me in No Time to Die, because I knew that James Bond was going to die at the end of the film. I saw the spoilers for
it. I didn't until I heard your review of it, but I didn't care either.
Did I say that in the review?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, spoilers ahead, mofo.
I think it was like a classic Remzo, quote-unquote, non-spoiler review. We're like, I'm just going to tell you this one thing that's the entire plot of the movie. Other than that, I'm not going to reveal anything that happens.
Yeah, but it's like I knew that going into the theater like 2 days prior, I that's when I found out. But then I just got so obsessed with the film, I almost completely forgot about it. So when Bond finally did die, I was like, oh yeah. That's a sign of a good film. Yeah. It makes you forget that it was even spoiled for you. Yeah,
I will say, as far as No Way Home, and I'm not going to discuss anything that wasn't in trailers, but even like seeing the villains appear at certain times that I knew was going to appear, they're in trailers, like there's no doubt they're going to appear, I still popped and was like, oh shit, you know? So you can forget, you get lost in the movie, and you can still have that, maybe it's not the same exact reaction, but you still get that emotional pull for sure.
Yeah, speaking of emotional pull, today is a special episode. Yes, every episode is a special episode, but it is a very special
episode. All special
today
episodes.
Is a Kirby Club produced episode. Mark, what is the Kirby Club and what madness are we getting into today?
Well, the Kirby Club is a very elite level on the Second Print Comics Patreon, where not only do you get all of the benefits of being a Second Print patron, meaning that you get access to all of our exclusive audio shows, audio content, such as Hawkeye recaps, upcoming very soon Boba Fett recaps, you get Remzo rants, you get What Mark Missed, where I look at, well, like the title suggests, comics that I missed during my dark period. You get all sorts of extra bonus content for a measly $5 or more in the case of our patron today, our Kirby Club producer. But at these higher levels, I mean, you get monthly calls with Remzo and I, the Journey into Mystery level, the Epic Crossover level, you get graphic novels, hardcover graphic novels, hand selected by Remzo and myself, delivered to your door every 3 months. And then at the Kirby Club level, which our patron today at the Kirby Club level, at which our today's patron is, oh man, why am I going to say this thing at all?
Today's patron is special.
Yes. At the Kirby Club level, of which our today's patron, who's going to join us in a second, is a member of, you get to actually produce episodes of this podcast. So far, we have, our last month we did that villains episode, which is really fun, where we got to break down some of our favorite villains. This week, well, why should I say it when I can actually bring him? He's actually here with us right now. I'm very pleased to be joined by one of our top fans, Kirby Club level producer, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, what's happening, man?
Not much, just hanging out.
Jeffrey, have you decided to get the tattoo yet? Because that's the only real way we'll ever know that you're willing to commit for life. Because marriages come and go, nations come and go, but indeed, just like Wu-Tang Clan, SPC for life.
It's just a tattoo
I'll put it on my to-do list.
Yeah, you can either be a $50 per month supporter and produce an episode every few months, or you can get the tattoo, but you still have to pay us, actually. So, yeah, never mind. But, Jeffrey, you set us up today to talk about a series that I absolutely love, that Remzo and I both gave very high praise to when we first talked about it back in SBC episode 18. It is, of course, The Max by Sam Keith. This is one of my favorite books from when I was a youth, first getting into Image Comics. The two that really captured me the most, as I've talked about ad nauseum here, were Savage Dragon, but behind Savage Dragon, it didn't have the longevity because it didn't last nearly as long, but right behind there in terms of how much it sucked me in from the beginning was The Max. So why don't you just hit us up a little bit with some of your history. First of all, I'm actually more curious like how and when you got into comics in general, and then you can kind of guide us into your love for The Max.
Well, I got into comics pretty young, but I was sort of, there weren't really comics that I collected. Like, I would basically just, you know, when my parents took me to the store or whatever, I'd head over to the comic section, just pick out what struck my fancy, you know, on any given day. But yeah, the Max, you know, the first issue of the Max that I got was a Max issue 6, which is part of this collection. And it was, you know, 93. So I would have been, I believe when it came out, I would have been 10 years old. It was the
man, first, I wasn't even a, you know, like a glimmer in my father's eye.
I was already 13 then, for perspective.
But yeah, and you know, it was the first, I guess you'd say, adult comic that I'd ever purchased, you know, in terms of, you know, the themes and whatnot, you know, a lot more, you know, it's a lot more, you know, a lot darker than, you know, two superheroes punching each other, you know, and I got it because the cover art, which was, you know, the cover of it, you know, it's, you know, the Max, you know, this big cool looking dude, you know, shoving his hand, his fist down the throat of a cool looking shark guy. And so I was like, oh, that looks pretty cool. So I got it and I opened it up and started reading it. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, especially picking up at issue 6. I almost did it, episodes, issues. Picking up at issue 6. I mean, it's crazy if you started from issue 1. Man, I'm really doing it today. But picking up at issue 6 must have just been like completely mind-blowing for you as a 10-year-old.
Yeah. And then, you know, it starts off, you know, you have a little cameo from Calvin and Hobbes, you know, I don't know if you noticed that. I mean,
yeah, I did. I did on this read.
Yeah.
I don't know if I registered it when I was a kid.
Then, you know, Savage Dragon pops up for his cameo. And then, you know, you get to the showdown, you know, the shark guy attacks the Max. And then the Max, you know, you're getting ready for the slugfest with this guy with these awesome claws and whatnot. And then, oh, he glued his claws shut, which I believe even Sam Keith sort of admitted that, because people kept asking, like, well, wait, how could he glue his claws shut? And like later on, Sam Keith just said, well, I just did it just for laughs.
You know, yeah, he don't overthink this.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, because I have most of the, like the original series, you know, in the single issue. So I have all the letters pages from back then, which, you know, it's always a trip to go through and read the letters pages from that time. But, yeah, and so, you know, and then you had this little weird, you know, burnt up matchstick man doing narration of the fight, like breaking the fourth wall. And then, you know, you got, you know, you have boobies, you know.
That never hurts.
Dark Jungle Queen.
Never hurts.
So, to the yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. And so, you know, it was a mind trip, you know. And unfortunately, like at the time, I never really picked up another issue for several years on, because I think the next issue, there was like a 3-month delay. And so by the time the next issue came out, you know, I'd pretty much forgotten about it. And maybe, you know, a year or so later, I rented the cartoon from a video store and watched that. And, you know, it's pretty accurate to the comics. I think the cartoon covered like the first 12 issues or so. And so I was waiting for the part where he fights.
I'm sorry, was that series on MTV?
It wasn't in it.
Yeah, I think it was MTV. Yep.
Because I know Savage Dragon was MTV. I always forget that they did something for the
you
match.
You
were wrong. Too.
You said that last time, and then I fact-checked you, and I forgot to bring it up, so I'll bring it up now. Savage Dragon actually aired on UPN, and it is now a NBC Universal property, which is why I can watch it on Peacock. So that Max was not MTV, although, MTV, which actually makes sense.
Yeah, I think it was a double feature with the Wildcat cartoon on Saturday mornings, wasn't it?
I believe you are correct, yep. So Renzo gets fact-checked yet again.
If I wasn't so hungry and muting myself to eat Wheat Thins, I would argue, but there's no point.
Well, Jeffrey, unless you have any comments about Remzo's choice of snacks, I will thank you for joining us here today. And thank you for so much. We cannot thank you possibly enough. This is our feeble attempt at thanking you by bringing you on to produce this episode. But we really, from the bottom of our hearts, I can say thank you so much for supporting us. This is an absolute passion project for us. And, you know, I think Remzo and I both have other podcasts. And, you know, I'm not saying I don't have fun doing them, but I think this is where we really just let loose and have fun and talk about things that we enjoy talking about. So we really do appreciate you and all of our patrons who help us do this.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeffrey. Take care, brother.
Thank you.
All right. So with that being said, I think Jeffrey set us up pretty well for going into today's book. So Remzo, are you ready to dig into the Max?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. We start off with Max issue number 5. This is actually exactly where we left off back in the SBC episode number 18, where we looked at the first 4 issues of the Max by Sam Keith. And this one starts off, we're not really sure what's going on. We just kind of like see, you know, some images of like the Max kind of curled up, and there's some dialogue that says like a bit more to the left, more there, now down further. You know, really, it almost seems like they're implying a sexual thing, but when we get to the next page, there is no sexual anything going on. But this is all being seen through like a keyhole, it appears. So it seems like somebody is actually spying on them at this point. But it is just Julie giving Max basically like a Thai massage, basically just like walking on his back, getting those kinks out. Remzo, have you ever had a Thai massage where the ladies actually literally get up and walk on your back?
No, but now I want one.
Oh, it's awesome. It's amazing. It's absolutely incredible. If you ever have like back kinks to be worked out, which who freaking doesn't? You're getting thrown around on the judo mat all the time. You will not regret it as long as you get a good one, which I have had good success in the past. Today's sponsored by Thai Massages. Use discount code SBC at any Thai massage parlor.
You get 50% off, a happy ending. Tell them Mark and Remzo sent you.
Anyway, but yeah, Julie is giving the Max a Thai massage, and they're just kind of hanging out, and she's talking about how the Max is always falling asleep watching these cartoons, especially that cartoon Crap on in a Hat. Remzo, what can you tell me about Crap on in a Hat? Anything?
Was it like a Adult Swim show or something?
It's not a real show. It's just made up for this thing. He's basically the WB Frog, essentially, only like psychedelically trippy, as we'll see just a little bit later in this episode or this issue. They're both accurate. I could have said either one and they would be correct. But yeah, we do see someone was, in fact, watching the Max and Julie from across the street through some like binoculars or something, which is weird because why did it show a keyhole before? I don't really know. But anyway, they are, in fact, being spied on by an Iz. Do you remember the Iz, Remzo, from our last dive into the world of the Max?
The Izzes were the little evil motherfuckers that could go between, what was it, the Outback?
Yes, indeed, the Outback.
The Outback and the real world.
Exactly. So yeah, they're kind of
they're like minions but murderous,
essentially. Yeah, and they got these big teeth and they bite people, and they're just and they can appear as regular people to regular people, basically.
But the Max can see them for what they are.
Exactly. Little tiny black jerks. And they work at the behest of Mr. Gon, who was killed in episode four. Damn it. In issue number 4. I'm really bad. I thought I had almost cured it, and now it's just come back raging. My issues episodes issue. That's what's returned. Wow. Try saying that 1,000 times.
Tell me how you really feel.
But yeah, there's also a voice going along here, and this word balloon, I'm just going to say this word balloon looks somewhat similar to the word balloons that we did see from Mr. Gon previously. But this person is saying, I could blow them both away right here. Not that I would, of course. I don't operate that way still. And so it's really the Iz that's looking, though. We just read this voice from off camera. And yeah, Julie and Max are kind of talking, and Julie's just like basically saying, look, all right, go to sleep. It's not like a wacky cartoon. Is going to infect your brain or something. So I guess it's no big deal. And then she says, just don't fall in. Okay. That's all I need is for you to turn into some stupid cartoon. So of course, what happens here, we start to see as the Max falls asleep. And as he does, when the Max falls asleep, he often goes into the Outback, which is it's basically Julie's subconscious at the end of the day. But weird things happen in the Outback. There's weird rabbit creatures. There's other creatures. But sure enough, just as Julie says, I don't need you to turn into some stupid cartoon. Slowly as the Max drifts into the Outback, we see this image of the bunny we always see, this image of this little doll we always see, and we see this like WB frog looking motherfucker who it will turn out is Crap on in a Hat. The Max does indeed turn into a freaking cartoon, which I just...
Wah.
Yeah, I mean, Julie, you said it, and so of course it's going to happen. And they actually show the Max like going into cartoon world as kind of like turning into like a 2D, figure, almost like he is just on flat paper. I really like, how Sam Keith did this with the art here. It's really impressive to me. But yeah, for now we see the Max is kind of in a cartoon. He's actually in the cartoon Crap On by this guy Dave Feist. So I'm not sure who Dave Feist is, if he's a real guy or if they just like made this guy up. I assumed
it was a name made because it implies he's going into a show. So because you really want to immerse it, it's almost like the readers watch watching the cartoon.
Yeah, like that I get. I just mean, I wonder if it's a name he just made up, or if it's just like, hey, I have a friend named Dave and I'm just going to put his name in my comic kind of thing. I'm probably doing that all the time. I just put all my friends' names in the comics, which I will do someday when we start our SBC publishing branch. But we need your money on Patreon first. Thank you very much, Jeffrey. But yeah, moving along here, Max is basically running around, running through the outback, running through these little creatures. And there's a point where he says, like, he knows these creatures are his fears. I thought this was pretty interesting, Renzo. I'm going to tell you a little story that I usually keep behind paywalls and that sort of thing. I feel like Joe Rogan here. You ever done DMT?
This is about to get interesting. No, Mark, I have not done DMT.
Okay, well, I'm Joe Rogan, and you're my guest who hasn't done DMT, so I'm going to tell you about it. So I did once, and I'm not going to get into the entire thing, but one aspect of when I did that is I saw these. Now I'm wondering, did my subconscious access this part of my brain that, because now that I think about it, they actually look a lot like the Iz. And also, have you ever seen the movie Critters? At least tell me you've seen Critters.
Yeah.
Okay. They look like the Critters, but like with bigger teeth, and these little black creatures were just like floating at me, and I knew that they were my fears, much like the Max knows that these are his fears. The Max is a pussy, so he's running from them. I didn't run from them. I just watched them and laughed at them, and as I laughed at them, they fell away and into nothingness, which taught me that you know, your fears can't really hurt you, and you know, you just gotta laugh at things, and you know, that'll help you get by things. That's basically my lesson. Wow. From EMT. Yeah, so
that's deep, Mark. You ever eat elk?
I haven't, but I would actually I have had elk jerky, which I found delicious.
You're the full Rogan. We just got to get you back in jujitsu again.
I'm Joe Rogan if he spent all his time reading comics instead of doing jujitsu. That's basically who you're dealing with right here. But yeah, moving along. So yeah, the Max is running from his fears because he's a pussy, not like me. He just embraces them and laughs at them. All his fears are named Dave, by the way, which I find pretty interesting. As he's running through this, like, you know, through the outback here, this cartoon version of the outback, he's dealing with this fucking crap on guy who's just basically just following around, giving him shit all the time. He's like, you see, I'm the Crapon, and this is my show, and I know what you've got beneath that mask. I just know. And they're basically talking in like Dr. Seuss talk at this point. They're each rhyming to each other, and they're just kind of like, you know, going back and forth about the nature of things. And you know, the Max is like, that's not true. I thought you were just animated. And then Crapon says, each line that defines me is carefully weighted, but I'm just as real as you are, maybe realer. This is just a mad jail, and you're the mad jailer. It goes on like this for quite a few entertaining pages, I must say, of just the Max and Crapon just kind of basically just doing nursery rhymes to each other, but it's all quite entertaining. It's really just mimicking kind of like a Dr. Seuss type story. And then yeah, the Max is running away, and these guys all want to rip his mask off, which is one of the Max's big fears that we see in the first four issues. He's really afraid of having his mask ripped off because he thinks he's a bunny, and he thinks he's gonna see this fucking bunny rabbit face underneath, and he's definitely afraid of seeing that because he doesn't want to think that he's actually a bunny. What's this one of the many quirks of the mask? We all got a friend like that, Remzo, though, don't we?
Oh yeah, yeah, sometimes people were related to.
yes, unfortunately, yeah, sometimes. Yes, we all know one or two people that just think they might be a bunny, really. Yeah.
We all know that guy.
Yeah, so the Max continues to run and run from these little fear creatures. At the end of the day, really the Max is like afraid of knowing who he is and his origins, really, because we don't really know what the Max is. We just know he's this homeless guy that wears this weird purple outfit. He doesn't know what he is, and he doesn't want to know what he is because he's afraid that he's going to be afraid of what he is. Again, giant pussy compared to me. But yeah, I also put that Crapon is, yeah, in my notes, I put Crapon is basically the WB frog. Oh, and he also basically says that fish, like Max is carrying around this fish the whole time. And he says that fish is like your consciousness. So he's like carrying his consciousness around. Now, this is very much, you know, Sam Keith stuff here on in the Max. It's very, there's very Nietzschean type stuff, these concepts about the id, the superego, it's all kind of worked in here. And so if you recognize any of those terms, you can recognize kind of some of the conversation more. It doesn't make it any less confusing, but it does make it makes it feel smarter, that's for sure. I'll tell you that much. And as always, whatever Max is doing in the outback is like paralleling something in the real world. So he's running from these things, he falls into this moat. For some reason, these little creatures are like on some like tiny little boat now. But then we see that the Max is actually in a dumpster. So in the real world. So we get a little glimpse of what's going on there in the real world, but he is still in the outback. And so we go back to the outback. He's still running away, carrying his consciousness away from all of his fears here, all all these little blue creatures here. And he's saying, if these guys can kill me and make me roll over, I'll be just as dead back on Julie's old sofa. And then, of course, as this is happening, they're making these noises. This crazy. I really love, this is something I talked about in the last time we looked at the Max. I really love how Sam Keith uses like lettering and uses like the words outside of word bubbles to project like certain sounds. Like here, you just see this lettering that's like scrolling through multiple panels saying Chubala, Chubala, Chubala. And that's just like the sound these things are making. And the Max is just like, oh shit. Yipe. So now he's like tied up by all these little blue fear creatures. And he's not having a good time here. And basically he gets to this point where he says, I must face what the fears make me fearful to do, which is true. This is a good lesson. You do need to face the fears head on. I must face what the fears make me fearful to do. I must rip off this mask. It's time that I knew. He's still rhyming. What lies beneath it? Is it beans? So as he holds this mask out, we don't see his face. We just see him holding the mask and these beans start to just fall out. And he says, it is pods. What a strange thing to do, to keep seeds in my face, and how odd. And then we see kind of a glimmer of the outback, well, like the outback that we're used to seeing, as these seeds continue to fall down. And then we kind of pan out and we see these seeds are all falling by this plant, and the plant is here. And now we see young Julie next to a skull that looks like the Max's skull. And now young Julie is talking to this Max skull. And this Max skull is like the hardest thing to describe this series because it's so freaking crazy and insane. So I would highly recommend, I'd highly recommend listening to, if you don't read these issues, at least go listen to episode 18 of Second Print Comics so you can understand some context of these characters, because it's confusing even with the context.
I always think like if for comics and for comic book storylines that have not been adapted into either a TV show or a film, you know who I would want to direct a Max movie or maybe a series?
Zack Snyder's The Max.
Well, that would be awesome.
I want Zack Snyder's everything now.
I think Dan Harmon from Rick and Morty would be perfect at this.
I could see that. I could totally see that. Would this be like a live action, or would you want to animate?
Either. Well, they keep saying that Channing Tatum is going to produce and star in a Max movie.
Really?
But like I would rather see something with Dan Harmon.
You know who I'd like
directing.
To see play the Max?
Who?
I feel like it would really work for me. Bruce Willis. I don't know why. It just feels right to me. You don't seem nearly as impressed.
I guess I have to think about it. I would think Hugo Weaving.
Interesting. Okay.
Because that guy can do an entire character.
Voice differently, you and I think that's the big difference.
Oh yeah.
That must be what you're picturing. I think of British or something.
Well, I think of him as like, you know, the Hugo Weaving does not get enough credit for being an amazing voice actor. When you compare him for what he did as V in V for Vendetta, and then what he did when he was pretending to be German as the Red Skull, and then a bunch of his animated appearances, I think he could do a whole completely different character just for the Max. I love Hugo Weaving. He's the king of the nerds. So we're talking about freaking Megatron right here.
He could totally do it. I'll take any Max adaptation at this point. That it's been like 20 years since that MTV series. But Julie, who is different versions. Everything in the Outback ultimately represents something in Julie's subconscious. This is something we kind of learn going along here. But she's saying to the Max skull, she's like, "You shouldn't be here." And he says, "Who are you, little girl?" He's like, "The part of the Jungle Queen that can't grow up, kind of developmentally stunted. This is too private a place for you to be." And the Max skull says, why do I look like an Eels album cover? Sam Keith really deserves credit because there are many, many times as silly the series is both silly and ultra serious at the same time. It's like very deep in a lot of the concepts it talks about, trauma, like subconsciousness, all these sorts of things. But Sam Keith really finds a way to insert a lot of levity throughout all this craziness. And so a lot of these one-liners really, really work for me. And he's like, "Yeah, why do I look like an Eagles album cover?" And she's like, "Well, you're dead." He's like, "Well, yeah, I figured." But and now suddenly he's the real Max. He's suddenly just, because this is the Outback. And we're seeing the Max in the real world, I think, talking to actual Julie while this Max skull, while this Max skull is talking to little Julie in the Outback. And he's saying, "But if I'm supposed to protect the Jungle Queen, why shouldn't I protect you too?" She says, "This is a holy place. Even I don't come here. Go away. No, go back the way you came. You've dragged us both into the Ehrlich dimension." These like creatures disappear and they're like, "What the hell?" And basically Max now is like fully back in the real world and he's like, "All right." And he's telling Julie the story. He's like, "And then I woke up. Too many cartoons and Pez, I guess." And Julie just says, "I think you OD'd." And then we kind of see, we get some appearances here from the rabbit bunny makes an appearance again. This doll makes an appearance again. But at the end, Julie just says like, all right, Max, just rest now. And as we see Max kind of heading back into the outback as he goes back to sleep, because again, that's what happens. Max goes to sleep and he's in the outback. Must be exhausting. Every time you fade off, you're just in this totally crazy place.
It's like some Fight Club stuff.
Yeah, it is very much Fight Club stuff. We then move on to issue number 6 of the Max. My notes just says two feminists sit down on a dock talking about the Max. But he adds, this is Julie and Sarah's mom here. And, you know, they're just talking like, you know, feminist stuff and, you know, all sorts of things, which, yeah, I always find the dialogue pretty entertaining.
I know we talked about it last time, but I just want to reiterate, Julie's probably one of my favorite original comic book characters.
Yeah, she's great.
And it's something that we've talked about a lot recently, especially as, you know, what's going on in the comic book industry and stuff always bleeds in. So I don't want to, you know, push people away because of my opinions. But like, what I love about Julie is that Julie is a character who there aren't many other similar characters in any title like Julie. And Julie has a very unique voice. I mean, in the way that she's written, it's authentic to the character while still being somewhat humorous for people that might not necessarily agree with her or like her. That's the great thing about comics, because you can read this character in their own voice while putting your own perspective on them. And, you know, when a character is good, it doesn't matter who they are, what they believe, what they do. If a good character is a good character, they will always stand out. And that's what I've always liked about Julie. And this first page of this issue is just, I'm reading this, I'm just like, you know what? Like, it's just such a ridiculous conversation, but, you know, it's authentic to the character. It means something to the story. I like it.
Yeah, I do too. And I really like even here, like the portrayal of her body. You know, they show this like side shot of her, and she is by no means a perfect female. She actually she's very attractive, but you know, she looks like a regular person, you know, which
Julie is thick.
She's a little thick, yeah. But I mean, she looks like a girl you'd meet in real life. And, you know, I think that's something that you don't see in comics very often, even in, and I kind of get it when it's superhero stuff and they're supposed to be, you know, in great shape because they're superheroes. So that makes more sense.
They're all a Rob Liefeld woman.
Yeah, basically. But I don't want a flabby superhero, because then I can't really buy that they're superhero. Like in Eternals, that one guy, the one chubby guy.
Fastos.
Yeah, I just like, I can't take you as a hero. I don't know. Maybe I am.
Well, you know, it's like, well, I mean, here's a counter example. I'll be quiet. Like the character of Faith in the Valiant
universe. I do like Faith.
I don't fucking like Faith.
Oh, okay.
Faith,
well,
is the only scene in any book I like is in Unity Volume 2, where the Unity, you know, Exo Man or War Ninjak and Eternal Warrior, they end up murdering a bunch of villains like it's nothing. And Faith walks in. She's like, wait, I can't join your team. You're killing people. And she flies away crying. And they're like, well, there goes that new recruit.
Yeah. My version of Faith was a part of the original Harbingers comic way back in the early 90s. So that's, I haven't really read.
The new one is like a Rosie O'Donnell special. Okay, it's, well, just, they ruined her.
Then I probably would also not like Faith at this point.
There's no Faith in the Faith comic. No, that's why they keep having to reboot her.
Yep. But yeah, they're just having a chat and kind of chatting about the Max a bit too. But meanwhile, these two kids, so this is what Jeffrey was referring to, this Calvin and Hobbes appearance. It's not, yeah, it is. There's one kid, then they has this little kid with him who is, yeah, clearly, which one's the tiger? I always forget. Calvin? Calvin's
Hobbes.
Hobbes the tiger.
No, right. Calvin's the kid. Hobbes is the tiger.
Hobbes the tiger. Okay. So whatever. Calvin and Hobbes, either way, are also there checking out this box. And they're like, oh, it looks like this guy's been dead for a long time. And, you know, just like they're about to poke into this box to check out this dead guy, because, you know, that's what kids do. When suddenly, who appears? My favorite.
Dun,
the Savage Dragon. Savage Dragon is here. And they say, oh, no, you're the dragon. He's like, yep, that's my pronoun, son. Don't wear it out. Pronoun joke way ahead of its time. Was not expecting that.
Hashtag
one
woke in the 90s.
Yeah, but basically Savage Dragon is like is getting these kids out of the alley. But that's just kind of a side job, because he's really in town to go after this villain of his known as Mako, who has been spotted here. And there's a little subtle thing here. I don't think I even noticed it the first time through, but these cops that Savage Dragon is walking out, it's walking these kids out with, they are actually Iz. So right as we see, so I think I misunderstood this. I thought that the Max just happened upon Mako the first time. No, but it is clear Mako was actually hired to go after the Max. Yeah, in the next scene, we see Mako, who's a longtime Savage Dragon villain. Some might say he was the inspiration for King Shark, who did come out after Mako. Just saying.
King Shark is a shark.
King Shark is a shark. Mako talks a lot more than King Shark. Mako's like a regular talking guy who just happens to be a shark. And he busts through the Max's apartment, wakes him up from his nap, sort of, because he's still also kind of in the outback. And Mako is just bloodthirsty. And he says, "You ducked on purpose, Mauve Boy." I don't even know what Mauve Boy means. "Now I'm going to do you slow." And he like, "I didn't duck on purpose." He was just like sleeping on the couch. Meanwhile, so like Julie and then this chick and Sarah's mom are still chatting. So we kind of are interspersed between their chat, talking about, you know, the Max and feminism and censorship, like Sarah's mom. I don't even know her name, but Sarah's mom, the character Sarah.
Sarah's mom does not
Sarah's
have it going
mom
on.
Wants to censor stuff. She's talking about violence on TV and censorship and all this stuff. Meanwhile, we see a battle between the Mako and the Max. And, you know, like the Max is, oh yeah, that, and something that Jeffrey mentioned is that the Max had accidentally like glued his jaw, his claws shut for some reason. So he is battling Mako, but he's kind of like not at full power here because he can't really use his claws. So he's pretty much just running away from Mako here. And Mako's going after him, almost eats him a bunch of different times. And like, it's interesting, like it's not often you get a hero, supposed hero. Max is not really like a traditional hero by any means, but spending panels and panels not fighting from a villain, but just running the fuck away from him, which I really like. I mean, it's not something you see often, and I like that they can portray the main character as just, yeah, he's just, cause, you know, he's just this guy in this costume, I guess. And, you know, yeah, he has these claws, but shit, now that those things are wrapped up, yeah, I'm running away from this giant shark. What about you?
Can't blame a guy.
No, you cannot. And he also refers to Mako as a land shark, which is pretty funny because that's something that is, you know, he like sees things in the real world as part of the outback. So in his mind, you know, Mako is just a land shark, just another land shark coming after him. Meanwhile, in the real world, Mako is a hired assassin who is trying to kill him for some reason or another.
Is the Max powerless in the outback?
They don't really make it clear like what if he has,
because it seems like he's like, when he's in the outback, he's much more vulnerable to things, whereas in, and we saw this in the first volume, like he can kick ass and do stuff in the real world.
Yeah, but it's not even clear in the real world if he has powers per se or if he's just kind of tough, you know, like he fights, yeah, like normal type. Usually he's fighting like just like, you know, some homeless guy who's like harassing a woman or something. He's not, until now, until here with Mako, he's usually not fighting like other superpowered beings, or he's fighting Mr. Gone, and it's not really clear exactly what his powers are or not. So it's not really clear, but he's definitely different in the outback, where, well, pretty much anything can happen in the outback. You know, it's all about whatever your subconscious is telling you or something like that. But yeah, anyway, Max continues to run away from Mako while Julie and Sarah's mom, I'm sure she has a name. She's Sarah's mom in my notes. She's Sarah's mom.
Karen.
In my
mind. We'll call her
Let's
Karen.
Let's call her Karen. Meanwhile, like Mako chases the Max into a pool, which seems like the worst place you'd want to run away from a shark into, like into his home territory. And we also are getting a narration, by the way. This starts somewhere in here. We're basically getting, like Jeffrey referred to, this sort of fourth wall narration from a word balloon that looks, again, very similar to Mr. Gone's word balloons. He says, "I love it when you think the villain's way far away. Then he just pops up. And now Max has to fight a shark guy in a water. Violence is so cool." And Max is saying, "My head, ugh, not now." And whenever he starts getting these pounding headaches, it's when he's about to go into the outback fully. So I think at this point, he's presently like in the real world, but now he's got that rack-a-dack-a-dack-a-doom-doom pounding in his head. And now appears the Jungle Queen, who is really Julie in her subconscious, ruler of this world. And Max is like, "Well, but this version looks different. Like, she has dark hair, but otherwise it kind of looks like Julie's body." And he says, "Well, I thought Julie was a blonde. I thought, you know, the Jungle Queen was a blonde. What's going on here? And how come she looks like a bad paperback cover?" Again, just some of these little one-liners that did crack me up.
Can't you hear Dan Harmon's voice throughout this? I mean, this could easily
What's
be
his
like,
voice? Is he Rick? Is he?
I'm not speaking like literally. I'm like, you know, his artistic expression. Yeah, it's a lot like Rick and Morty.
No, I totally can. I absolutely can. And he's like, how come your hair is black now? And then this is like little Julie is back there again. She's like, "Yeah, and if you're the leper queen, where's your leopard?" And leper queen Julie says, "I have been changed. Cruelty and pain have changed me. And my leopard is dead." And we see a little barrel mount for the leopard. So that's very sad. But we are suddenly thrust back in the real world, and we and the Max both go, "We're back." And Max is like, "Oh shit, I'm back." And Mako is like, acts like a shark, or as we're told sharks are, when he senses a little blood, he gets more and more excited. It's now Mako's yelling blood, 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 blood as they shoot out of the water. And Mako is just continuing to chase him. Max like hides under a truck. Mako just lifts up the truck, throws the truck. And Mako just is getting in more and more of a frenzy as the Max just dodges the truck, continues to run away. Then Max runs into this door called Just Cords. And he's like, oh my God, there's telephone cords everywhere. It's the phone is hilarious. This is very Rick and Morty too, I guess. I could totally see this. He's like, he just runs into a store where they only sell cords. That's all they sell is telephone cords, which I don't think exists anymore because everyone uses cell phones now, but we still used phones with cords back then. He's like, hey, there's
fun fact. There are two working payphones in Washington, D.C.
Really? Wow. I cannot remember the last time I've seen one of those.
Hashtag the more you know.
Ding, 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 ding. Max like, man, there's cords everywhere. And what's that smell? And these two guys are in there completely unfazed, apparently, by this guy jumping into their store. He's like, yeah, solve it. We're cleaning the cords today. Cleaning the cords. He's like, oh, Jesus Christ. So Max gets wrapped up in all these cords while he's running from Mako. And he's like, God, I hate my life. But what happens is the solvent, this cleaning solvent they were using for the cords, sets his claws free. And he's like, yes, my claws are free. And now we get a little more narration from this mysterious word balloons. He says, look at that. You can see his veins and ridged muscles and gristle. Boy, is he mad. I bet we're going to see something now. Something. Ba-boom. And there's just a big explosion. So just as the Max has finally got his claws back, is ready to rock, ready to party, ready to kick some ass, this thing explodes. Turns out that the corrosive, but this is what we learned from Officer Dragon. So Savage Dragon's in this, but he's not really like involved in it. He's just kind of like a cameo. It is really more Mako that makes up the bulk of this crossover. Yeah, so basically what happened is the solvent melted the cords, and then there was an explosion of some kind. So basically in the end, Mako got away, and they kind of take off the Max. They don't even know who this guy is. They just toss him in the back of the truck, but that doesn't last very long. Meanwhile, Sarah Julie and Sarah's mom Karen, I guess, they are sitting in a car waiting for this tow truck, and we just hear a crash. So we don't really know what's happened yet. So we then head back to the Outback, where Julie is talking to little Julie, who is her inner psyche, basically represents her inner psyche. And they're just chatting. I'm not gonna recap the whole whole thing, but she's also commenting. She sees the Max skull, and she's like, so Max is dead in this hallucination. And little Julie says, yeah, he can't exist here. You're the only psychic entity here. Meaning her, them. And then we see these little baby leopards, and Julie's like, oh, baby leopards. I suppose this is where I learned that for every creature that dies, another is born. Laying it on a bit thick, are we? So I do like Julie's internal commentary about her own trippy little subconscious trips into the Outback as well. But in the end, basically the revelation we get here, because Julie always thinks that the Max is like the Outback is the Max's, because like he goes to the Outback and has all these adventures. But little Julie then tells her here that it's actually that the Outback is actually Julie's consciousness, Julie's subconscious, and the Max just sort of goes there to protect her, basically, or to help.
That's her. Deep.
Very deep. Yes. As we wind up, we go, basically it's Julie's dream and Max is part of it, not the other way around. We then learned that it was the tow truck guy that had hit their car, had hit Julie's car. And so Julie's fine. Sarah's mom, Karen, ends up in the hospital, but we see Sarah pulling her out of the hospital on like a wheelchair at the end. And then we just kind of get some head thoughts of Max, where he's kind of referencing the first episode. Damn it. The first issue again, where he was talking about the show Cheers, and he's like, yeah, it was like weird when the show Cheers ended, like they become my friends and then suddenly they're just gone one day. And it was like, and he's like, I know in my mind that they all just moved on, like they're real actors and they're real people and they went on to their lives and did other things, but to me they all died. And he just ends with this somewhat maybe sad or depressing thought. He just says everybody dies. and that is the end of Max issue 6. Remzo, thoughts so far?
What I love about this series, and it's why
I recommend taking some DMT before you respond to this.
I mean, I've been drinking a little bit, but I mean, I think my thoughts would still be the same without it. This is, and I mean, I say it in, when I say it's like a Rick and Morty episode, like there are Rick and Morty episodes that are just outright fucking hilarious. And then there are episodes that are still funny, but then they just take a really like dramatic turn. Mm-hmm. And it isn't often that a story, whether it be a comic or a show, are able to really tie those two very polar opposite emotions together. But the Max really does that. And I mean, this issue is really a prime example of that.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And I also, what do you think of the use of, or the sort of use of Savage Dragon and Mako here? Because this is something that that they Image guys did a lot in the early days, because they just wanted their characters to appear in various stories. I think Eric Larson was the best at this. He used characters that appeared in like ways that ended up being really important. Like, he has a whole storyline with Wildstar that I won't spoil, but it is what we're going to talk about in a couple issues when we do return to Savage Dragon. A couple episodes when we talk about Savage Dragon again. But I mean, this is a character that's not his at all. But he highlights this character in several different ways throughout the course of his book, and they actually, in ways that actually impact the story in very significant ways. So I think Eric Larson is the best at this, because a lot of times when characters appear as cameos, it's just, you know, it's just to get the promotion, and it's just kind of seen as a throwaway. Kind of is here to an extent. I mean, Mako could have been almost anybody here, but it was fine. I wasn't offended by it. But what do you think about the kind of character crossover?
I think sometimes it's appropriate, especially early on in a series like this. Like, you know, for example, in Amazing Spider-Man issue 1, they go ahead and immediately introduce the Fantastic Four. Now, you could have just gone into it the way that most people did, where it takes a little while and then you start introducing these characters. But in many ways, it solidifies a story without also having to give a giant amount of time to giving a backstory for characters. So Mako, if let's say Mako had not existed in Savage Dragon before this, they would have to really pump him up. They would have to really, you know, set up some exposition, set up some narration to give a backstory at some point, whether in this issue or a later issue. But because he's already established villain in Savage Dragon, you could just throw him in here. Whether people are familiar with him or not, it gives the artist and it gives the writer an ability just to, you know, move on with the story without having to get bogged down for every character's needs.
Indeed. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, like, why not? If it doesn't really matter, if it's really just muscle going after the max, why not make it a character from another book? Why not have, you know, pique a little interest? Why not have Savage Dragon pop in? Yes, it could have just been some ordinary guy who's a police officer, but it doesn't hurt. I mean, whatever, you know, so I see no harm in it.
Yeah. And I use that Amazing Spider-Man example because, like, you know, after that issue, we won't see Spider-Man interact with other established Marvel characters for a little while. So it wasn't necessarily like clout chasing. Like, it was good because it really solidified at the time that the Marvel universe is a shared comic book universe. But there are other examples, like one of my favorite DC series to come out of Dark Knight's Metal, the first go around, was The Silencer. I think The Silencer is one of my favorite comics of the last 5 years. Wow. But the thing that oh, we'll have to do a Silencer run at some point. I think the thing that harmed the Silencer was that she was borrowing so many other people's villains that she didn't really feel to many people like she was that necessary or she was that established, because she's not fighting anybody who was really outside of like Batman's rogues gallery. So because of that, it did kind of harm her in a way. And I do think that may have been the case, but you know, it was one of the situations where you either lay it on really thick or you don't lay it on enough. I think by throwing Savage Dragon in here, they weren't saying, oh, it's going to be a team up for the ages. No, it's just part of the story. And it, you know, I didn't see it as something great, but it certainly didn't take away from it. It just made it solidify that, oh yeah, this stuff happens to cross over every once in a while.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just a reminder that there's other books out there, and as long as it fits and doesn't feel wedged in, which to me it didn't. Like, I could have never read Savage Dragon and been like, oh, there's a shark creature after him. Whatever. It could be anything. So it works for
me. It's a pretty ridiculous world as is. Yeah. So I could buy it.
Exactly. So yeah, we go into issue seven here, and this medical examiner is checking out that dead body that the police took away, that homeless guy. It's actually this guy, Tego, who I think was actually a guy that was like scaring Julie in the first episode that the Max chased away. But yeah, they said, oh, we found this guy in a box, blah, blah, blah. So he's like examining the body. He takes off this hat and like his, like whatever scarf he has on. And then suddenly it is revealed to be a giant Iz, one of those Iz creatures. So this medical examiner can actually see that it's an Iz now. So he's like, what the fuck? He's like, that ain't right. That ain't what he looked like when he was brung in. It's, I don't know why I'm giving him this accent. I don't think they're anywhere near the South, but he's like, it's unnatural. And he's like, eh? And then we see a little Iz teeth peeking through the door. So implying that things are not about to go so well for this medical examiner. We then go back to the Max and we see that the Max is sleeping on Julie's couch, which he seems to do quite a bit. So of course, he is in the Outback, so we go and head into the Outback. And Julie and Max are walking around the Outback, and they're noticing that everything is tiny now. There's these, like everything is, like, they are just giant, and the entire Outback is so little small. And Julie picks up, like, one of these little creatures. They all look like little Dr. Seuss things, and she's like, what are those things? He's like, what thing? He's like, those little icks that you're grinding to jelly. He's like, those aren't the same thing. So the Max has been stepping on these little, like, izzes. So basically, in the Outback, to recap from our last Max episode, the Iz are white in the Outback and they're black in the real world. So he's just got like Iz all over his he's got Iz all over his shoes.
That's what she said.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing at myself here, don't mind me. And she's like, well, okay. And Julie's like, all right, if we're not dreaming, do you suppose we can get killed in here? Because she's like, this isn't really a dream, we're actually sort of going here and interacting with things. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm absolutely sure of it. She's like, well, that's a happy thought. He's like, but we won't die here, all right? I guess we're the biggest things around here. Everything is so tiny. And she's like, well, guess again. And she turns around, and who is it? It's Pitt, another image character.
All right, Mark. This is one of those moments where I'm actually incredibly lost. Please tell me, who is Pitt?
Well, Pitt is a character that was created by Dale Keown, who is one of my favorite Hulk artist of all time. He's very much tied in to the Peter David era of the Hulk, and I absolutely love Dale Keown as an artist, but he is one of the guys. He went to Image in like the second wave, so like that was like Sam Keith, Dale Keown, a few other guys, but basically Pitt is a human alien hybrid created by the alien race known as the Creed. He was genetically engineered to serve as a killing machine. He does appear slightly more alien than human, I would say, with his huge red pupilless eyes. He's got gray skin, pretty much no nose that you can see, and these giant teeth and giant talons. And that is Pitt. Honestly, he looks like the Hulk with some slight adjustments.
You're telling me that an Image creator ripped off something from Marvel?
I don't want to say ripped off. I like to say homage, maybe, or something like that. Even to the down to the point of he has these. Well, at least
it's only homaged if it's cooler.
That's true. I can honestly say I don't think I ever read a Pitt book, so I can't really comment too much on the character. I'm assuming you have not either, Rebzo.
No. And I don't really feel the need to.
Yeah, I feel like someone in the last 20 years would have told me you need to read Pitt if I needed to read Pitt. So, yeah. I didn't. Anyway, so Pitt is there in the Outback, and he is yelling. He is screaming about this kid, Timmy. He's like, Timmy, where's Timmy? He was my only friend, and now he's gone. And you know something. You took him. Give him back. So he's just going after the Max here. I don't know who Timmy is. I assume if I read the Pitt book, perhaps he has a friend named Timmy who's a little kid. I guess. I'm sure that is probably the case, but I don't really know. And the Max is like, well, Julie's my only friend, and if you hurt her, I will. And then we hear, hey, and Julie's just yelling, will you guys knock it off? This is supposed to be like my chance to work through a bunch of cathartic crap. Like, we're here in my subconscious. You guys are fighting. Like, this is a mess. And you, Mr. I'm too good to have nostrils. We don't have your Timmy. I don't know a Timmy. I like how she's just talking shit to this creature who, if she ever saw in real life, she would probably be completely frightened. But because they're in the Outback, I think, and she knows she's in her own subconscious, she feels like she has a little more power here. But right as they're all arguing about whether or not they're gonna fight, suddenly they look and see Iz, a lot of Iz, like a horde of Iz, like a billion Iz coming at them, and they're
like, that's a fuck ton of Iz.
A fuck ton of Iz, and they're like, all right, see ya, and they just take off. They leave Julie just hanging out while Pit just starts jumping away, kind of like the Hulk does when he makes these big jumps, and the Max is just running after him, I imagine, much far behind him. And Julie's like, well, all right, well, they did that quickly. He's like, next time I'll tell them to dig a hole and fill it with buttermilk for my bath. There doesn't seem to be any Iz in this direction. I don't know why, something's drawing me out here, something very intriguing. And she starts walking in another direction, and we see this creature sleeping. A lot of these creatures in the Outback, they all feel like very Dr. Seuss type creatures to me. I think there's a lot. I think one of them is even called a Seussidon, is like one of the names of one of the creatures. So there's definitely a Dr. Seussian inspiration here. Meanwhile, we go to,
it's like a giant dick turkey or something.
It's that's Yeah, that would be one way. It's a that's a giant dick turkey. That's what we're gonna go with. We're gonna call it the giant.
That's the
dick
only
turkey.
Way to describe it.
All right, that's what it is for now on. And yet, Sarah's back at school here, and she is in the art department because look at her. Obviously, she's in the art department. This big curly hair chick with glasses, and she finds this box, and this box starts talking to her. This box, she's thinking to herself. She's like, one stupid box. These two stupid boxes. Like, I hate doing inventory. And this one box says, "Life sucks, huh?" She's like, "What?" She's like, "Down here, kiddo." And she's like, "Okay." And he's like, hey, Sarah, I'm a magic piece of talking clay." And she's like, "Right." He's like, no, really, I can help you if you just sneak me into Julie Winter's house." And she's like, "Well, how do you know about Julie?" He's like, "Don't worry about that. I'm a magic piece of clay, and I really need to get to Julie Winter's house." Basically, Sarah's a fucking idiot. Like, eventually, like, this is, you know, we go back and forth between Sarah talking to this box and the Pit and the Max kind of bouncing between worlds. And but, you know, eventually he does convince her to take this box to Julie's house. And I'm just thinking, like, what a fucking moron.
Sarah was never known for making good decisions.
No, she really wasn't. And she's not making another one here. So I'm just going to, we'll bounce back to her a few times. But basically, it's a number of interludes of her being slowly convinced by this box to take this box. It's talking to her, saying it's a magic piece of clay back to Julie's house. This is your friend, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe you do want to know more about this fucking, what this magic box's and magic clay's intentions are. But again,
it's never good when women start talking to their boxes.
It's these art students, you know, she just sees it as a work of art. So she's all
completely flew past that remark.
Oh, did I miss a joke there?
Yeah, I said now it sounds stupid if I have to say it again and explain it. It's never good when women it's never good when women talk to their boxes.
Oh, there, you're right. I did just completely gloss over that. That was good. I'm gonna edit in a drum roll. Probably not though. Meanwhile, we go back and we are on the in the stairwell because again, when things are happening in the outback, they are also happening in the real world, sort of, or something. It's confusing, but Pitt is looking for Timmy and he's chasing this kid who looks like Timmy, but we know because the reader can see it's an is, and he follows Timmy.
Kind of looks like Kevin Hart.
Pitt or the is?
The is.
That sounds racist. Moving on. And yeah, he's about the same height. And so the is runs into this apartment and Pitt appears in there and he's like, "Oh, hey, what did you do with Timmy again?" He's talking to the Max. But suddenly everything changes. And now, like that, the Max and Pitt are tiny. So now you have a tiny Pitt and a tiny Max in Julie's apartment when suddenly they are attacked by a giant is. It's probably a regular sized is, but because they are very tiny now for some reason, it's a very, very scary giant is. So now they both just start running away from this giant is. Even as tough as Pitt looks, this is the second story in a row where Max is just running away, which I like because he's just this guy. And like, yeah, he's got these claws and maybe he has powers. We're not sure. Maybe he's strong, but he's just a guy. And if he's tiny,
I think I know how to describe him.
Okay.
Perfectly. He's a slapstick character.
He kind of is a slapstick character. Yeah, I think that's fair. That is very fair. Like, I could definitely see like the Max crossing over with the Three Stooges or something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
He's a guest star on Scooby-Doo.
Give me that one, IDW. Give me the Max versus the Three Stooges. We're combining. You know, there's a book I actually borrowed and Hoopla because I haven't read it. It's a Max and Batman crossover.
I own that, and it is actually pretty fun.
Cool. Well, I will. It's on my list. It's on my list of things to read.
It's a good Sunday read.
Yeah, but like I said, we keep bouncing back to Sarah talking to this box. It eventually tells her, like, hey, everyone has a spirit animal. Like, you need to have a spirit animal. He's like, maybe yours is a horse. What do you think about that? So he's basically convincing her. And I mean, I gloss over things here. Like, I'm talking about the story, but like, I should probably pause to stop, like, about how awesome Sam Keith's art is. Like, he can really go through various different styles. He can make the Max look cartoony. He can, you know, he goes back to his, like, sort of normal Max style. And then he always interludes these, like, beautiful, like, when the magical box is talking to Julie, talking about this horse creature, we get these like interspersed images of this like magnificent looking horse creature, but it's all very done in like this very, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just fucking cool and it's just fucking awesome. And you know, as we discussed, Sam Keith got his start on the early issues of Sandman, and there's a very similar kind of style. Obviously it's the same artist, so of course there's similar styles there, but they did a lot of similar stuff where it almost feels like the style changes part way, but the style always changes to match like the tone and match the feel of things. And I think he's really one of the more underrated artists. I mean, maybe he's rated highly, I don't know. I mean, but you just don't hear his name that often in the conversation, and it really should be.
I think it's because for some weird reason, I don't think it was necessarily his artwork, but I think it was necessarily the stories he was on, because he never really got one of those big titles. Like as much as we all like Spawn is as much as we all love, like, you know, Spawn, the reason why we really know about Todd McFarlane is because of what he did on the Hulk and Spider-Man.
Right.
And same goes for all these other artists, you know, Eric Larson, Rob Liefeld. They were always great, but would they have had the followings they had if they had not started with a Marvel or DC book? Now, don't get me wrong, Sandman published by DC at the time, DC book, but it was not one of their top selling books at the time. Sandman got a cult following after it started getting put in trade back when graphic novels became a thing. So I feel like it's slowly really starting to catch up now. That's why, thanks to the Sandman Audible books and what we're about to see on the Sandman Netflix series, I think we might be hearing his name a bit more often, especially as those old trade backs sell. So I think it's just about when it came out and how people have begun to really come over to it over time.
Yep, I think you're right. And like, yeah, like I said, if Channing Tatum or whatever is going to do a Max, maybe that will bring some more attention to these originals, because they really deserve the attention. I mean, this is Sam Keith, is, you can just tell he this is his passionate project, and it's so easy to see how that comes across here.
It makes you realize how lazy modern artists are.
Oh, totally.
In the comic book industry. Like, they're so lazy.
Eight panels here, and we'll just keep drawing them out. And like, I mean, and that, look, that
splash page, splash page, splash page.
Yeah, I mean, just the way he lays out panels is so unique. It's really, I don't want to say unlike anything I've ever seen in comics. That might be an exaggeration, but it's certainly very different than your standard.
It's art in motion on paper.
That is a great way to put it. Speaking of motion, we see, I really find this funny line. Like the Max is like hiding under something. It's hard to see what it is. And Mac and Pitt's like yelling at him. He's like, Max, stop hiding and run. Stop hiding and run. And Max is like, well, Max does not hide. Max is resting beneath the decaying body of this small airwell. So like when Max in the real world, he thinks everything is something else that exists in the outback, just like he called Mako a land shark. It's just like a thing with the Max. But anyway, they're still running away from this giant. Is they jump into the sink and they end up swimming in the giant sink lake at one point. And then the Max grabs a knife and is like trying to battle the Iz with this knife. The giant Iz, he stabs the Iz right in the freaking head, and which is actually like the most action we've seen and most offense we've seen from the Max, I think, in this entire series. Jumps on the Iz and stabs it in the skull, and he says he pushed Max too far. And Pitt's like, will you run? You know, Max, it's been real interesting meeting you. And then they go, they're still kind of running from this thing. They try to push a bookshelf onto the Iz, but that doesn't kill it. It busts through the bookshelf like nothing is killing this thing. But then finally, and at the same time now, Sarah is bringing that box up to Max's apartment, basically. And she like pushes in the door, and she's talking to the box. She's like, will you shut up? I don't even know why I'm doing this. Like, my world sucks, but at least it's kind of normal. And once I get rid of you, she basically just wants this thing to shut the fuck up. I could just left it at school, but whatever. She comes into Max's apartment, or Julie's apartment, I should say, and sees the tiny Max, tiny Pitt have this like Iz totally wrapped up again in telephone cords. Sam Keith has a thing with telephone cords. I don't know what it is. Weird fetish, if you ask me. Yeah, but she just kind of backs away, and the box is talking to her. It's like, Sarah, you stop talking, Sarah. I can't hear you. I'm inside, right? You haven't played a joke on old Mr. Clay, have you? You better not have, Sarah. And he's just screaming as she walks away. Then we head back to the outback, and we see Julie is talking to this little box as the giant, what do we call it, the giant turkey dick? Whatever. That giant weird creature that looks like a giant, but the cross between a giant penis and turkey is there, sort of.
The dick creature thing.
The giant dick creature thing is slowly like slugging its way towards her while she is talking to what we now see revealed, which matches the word balloons that we've been seeing for a couple issues here. A very, very tiny Mr. Gon.
Is he naked?
He does appear to be naked, yes. And she doesn't see him yet. He's kind of in there. We just see him thinking about her commentary, because she's just like, oh, what a funny little house. This is just like the one I made out of clay and popsicle sticks when I was a little girl. And he's thinking like, oh, shit, she's starting to remember now. It's too soon. If we all return to normal, I'll probably end up without a head, because she chopped his head off. But if I nail that thing with a poison dart, it'll buy me some time. So Julie is like, he's like, oh, I remember now. I was a jungle queen, ruler of a vast domain. And whenever evil appeared, I would fight it. It's just like I remember it. And he's like, he's really freaking out because he doesn't want her to remember. And then she says, and I had a pet bunny, but he died. Interesting, knowing that the Max has this fear that he is in fact a dead bunny, or not a bunny, but he's in fact a bunny. just something to think about. And anyway, Mr. Gon, as this thing is creeping up behind her, he's like, no time's left. I got to do it now. And then suddenly, as this creature is about to take a swing at Julie, suddenly we cut away because now we're going back. We're back to the Pit and the Max. So we'll get back to them. But yeah, Pit and Max are basically, we are now in the outback and kind of up on this ledge with all these is around them, which are actually to Pit. They appear as Timmy, a bunch of Timmies. And he's like, Timmy, they're all Timmy. But where are Timmy's eyes? And none of them have eyes. And the Max is like, what? Snap out of it, Pit. He's like, look, grab my hand, pull me up off this thing. There are just so many out there. Just stop standing there and saying Timmy over and over. And we just see that the Pit just says kill. And that is the end of issue 7, a literal cliffhanger. I wonder if that was on purpose. It's literally a cliffhanger. This episode, damn it, here we go again. Episodes.
Have you talked to somebody about that? Like, is this triggering some type of childhood trauma?
I'm afraid it might be. The Max is making me think that maybe the issues and episodes are just my own issues. I'm playing them and my own past episodes playing themselves out in my subconscious, in my own outback. But what do you think so far of this wacky, wacky doodle crossover with Pit as we head into our final issue here?
I really like it when some characters team up. I think other team ups in certain books sometimes water down the main character because the artist wants to play with some other IP. But I mean, this is just a really fun story, and not just this past issue. I've enjoyed the last 3 issues we've gone over, so I'm excited to cap it off with the next one.
Yeah, and I don't really care about Pit at all. Like, Pit doesn't do anything for me here, but he also, it's almost like, I know Pit is more of like a serious character, I think, but that almost makes it work better for me because Pit is this like big, scary.
He's the opposite of a Max in a personality sense, exactly. Because they look like they could be, you know, mano y mano the same, but personality wise, I mean, the Max is running and the Pit wants to fight and everything else. It's very slapstick like, which, yes, is what I appreciate about it because, yeah, it doesn't lean too hard into it, but it's such a 90s style indie book. You can't help but not love it.
Yeah, exactly. And it really does. This combo actually really works for me, which is surprising. I mean, I think this might literally be, maybe there's been some Image crossover that I read at some point, but as far as I can remember, this is like the only time I've really read something with Pit in it. And it's not that Pit impresses me, but just I feel like I would not enjoy anything else Pit is in.
He adds to the story.
He does, yes. And yeah. I guess much like Eric Larson, this didn't have to be Pit, but he made it work with Pit, with what Pit is. So, you know,
it
works for me.
I feel like it could have been Savage Dragon.
It could have been.
I mean, with the whole Timmy element, they could have found another. Like, Timmy's a MacGuffin in the situation.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that actually, so Eric Larson also did a crossover with the Max in his book. I'm not sure if that was, I feel like it might've been one of the issues we looked at, because I buzzed through like 27 issues in that episode somehow. But yeah, and they actually do go on like an adventure in the outback. So, I don't know, maybe that's more, we already saw this, so we're not going to do Savage Dragon again. Cause I agree that could have fit really well as well.
Especially since they introduced him for just like a panel.
Yeah, yeah. Like they could have just tied it right in. They could have just had him still in town, and then, you know, this whole thing happens. But whatever, it's fine. We're trying to get exposure to more books. Yeah. But going into issue 8, Max issue 8, we're just getting some kind of like internal monologue from Sarah now, as she is at this giant horse statue that's exists in here, and it's really crazy, creepy looking. But she's just kind of sitting there, like, "All right, when's this thing going to talk to me? Like, is this my spirit animal? Maybe if I sit and stare at this horse enough, I'll understand more. I'll be able to find myself or whatever I'm trying to do here." We go back to the outback as we left a cliffhanger there, a couple cliffhangers in the outback last time. But here we see Julie, and she just kills this creature. She turns around and throws a spear through this freaking thing, and giant turkey dick creature slowly dies. And there's a really, again, they work out these really funny lines in here. Like Mr. Gon is like, he's climbed out of this little house now, and he's like, "Yikes, that little cream filled blint is going native. I better book it." Like, he's like, "Shit, she's not just Julie now, she's the fucking Jungle Queen. And last time he encountered the Jungle Queen, he got his head chopped off." So he's not interested in really hanging around to see what happens here. But there's a funny line here. They're describing what this creature is finally, and it's not giant turkey dick. It's Malachi, terrible spectacled stalker of the plain. And until this morning, the greatest giant in the outback has time for but one thought. Sharp stick, it says in quotes. He says sharp stick, he thinks, and dies. Which I just found so hilarious.
Okay, so hear me out.
Yeah.
In certain panels, when they show him from certain angles, he looks very phallic. Mm-hmm. And Julie is a ultra feminist, and this is her self-conscious. And notice how Mr. Gon, the evil rapist who she, you know, cut off his head in the last volume, is back. So what if this is all a feminist wet dream?
That's not the direction I thought you were going with, but we'll just move on from there, I think.
Oh, slaying the dick creature, she's overcoming her fears of dick.
I mean, yeah, I don't think it is. I don't think it's unintentional, the phallic nature of things. I mean, we're joking about it, but I do think there is something there, because that is kind of, you know, we'll find out the full origin at some point down this road. Maybe Jeffrey's next episode, he'll put us back on some more Max. But this does all tie in and sort of make sense in the end eventually. So
you see, it's the dick cinematic universe inside her head.
The dick cinematic universe. Yeah, inside Julie's
dick cinematic universe.
Yeah, the Julieverse. Yeah, basically, then she does see Mr. Gon. So she grabs this tiny Mr. Gon. He's like, crap. And he's like, you, I always knew you weren't dead. Now I want the truth. And he's like, talk to Descartes, toots. I just love these little lines and references to philosophers. Toots, toots. I believe you pronounce that toots in the old school days. Meanwhile, back in Julie's apartment, somehow Max and Pitt have managed to, they've managed to tie up. That's kind of weird. They kind of left us like with like, it seemed like Pitt was about to kill Max or something while he's hanging on the ledge. And then suddenly they have the Iz tied up in the apartment. So that was a little bit, felt like a weird continuity issue. I'm just going to blame it on Outback real world transition problems. But that seemed a little odd to me because suddenly they just have this Iz tied up and they're just talking about what to do with him. And Max is like, well, we got to get rid of this thing. Like, I got a plan. So like, all right, what are we going to do? So basically they take this Iz and like bring it out to this balcony on this like board. And they're kind of like balancing out of this like table, this bench. And they're basically trying to send this Iz overboard, but again the Iz breaks free, starts biting, clamps at Pitt, grabs Pitt's pants with its teeth, and Pitt's just like, no Max, well, whatever you do, don't let go. And then Max lets go of this table, and then the giant Iz and the tiny Pitt fly off, I believe never to be seen again. So that was Pitt for you, everybody. Basically now the Max is like, and the Max is kind of talking to himself in Julie's apartment. He's like, brother Pitt looked mad as he sailed away. And then we hear a voice saying, who's out there? I can hear someone. Max, are you out there, Max? I'm still locked in the bathroom. So I guess Julie's been in the bathroom this entire time that tiny Max and tiny Pitt have been playing around with this Iz. He's like, you got to come save me, Max. And he says, I'm coming, Julie. And you see tiny Max is crawling under the bathroom door. At the same time, we also see some close-ups of this box that Sarah brought in. And we see that as he's crawling through the door, his mask has gotten knocked off, his tiny mask. So it bounces away. And you hear Julie's voice. We see Julie's voice. You hear podcasts. You read comics again. Okay. And
yes, Mark. Yes. Progress.
Bring us home. And we hear the voice. We see the voice. We read the voice. Whatever you do, says you're a, oh God. And so we don't know exactly what she sees, but then we head back to the Outback where we see what appears to be like a corpse of some kind. I think it's the corpse of maybe that Iz. And now Pitt is back. He's back there in the Outback. So, you know, Max is like, oh wow, I'm sure I'm glad he snapped out of it and pulled me up at the last second. And Pitt's like, yeah, me too. And he's like, so I guess like different things are happening. It seems like are happening in the Outback than are happening out here. But basically Pitt and Max are like, cool, that's over. And Max hops on a whale shark. Not a whale shark. What is this? This is called a air whale. He hops on an air whale, which in the real world is like usually a blimp when they show the Outback and the real world back to back. So he takes off. Meanwhile, we see Sarah still just sitting by this horse thing, waiting for it to freaking talk to her or tell her something. There's several pages of her just talking to the horse thing. Back to Julie's apartment, we see Max's tiny mask on the floor, and we see some dialogue. Julie saying like, Max, did you always? Like under the mask, I mean, and we do see images of a bunny again. So it's like, so is he really a bunny under the mask? I don't know. And she says, is this the secret why you were sent here? Or is this some kind of awful joke? Like, for God's sake, Max, answer me. And then we see like this thing on the floor, and we see Julie talking. She's like, what are you doing to me? She's holding Mr. Gon here. So we're kind of blurring between the real world and the Outback as she's now in the bathroom. It says with that twisted leering, long eared. And here he, and this is like a narration, the lamp. And then we see this lamp, and he's like, the spray of water drops over the slick blue surface, the pain, the blood. And Mr. Gon says, I'm showing you the truth. and we see what looks like the mask, the Max is like teeth and is purple, like his purple hue, but they're the bottom of a lamp and the lamp is on the ground knocked over. So
yeah, the lampshade.
So is the Max just a lampshade or something, or is he a bunny? We don't really know, but they do imply here that like maybe the Max is just this fucking lampshade that Julie talks to this whole time. I don't know. Basically, at the end here, Julie and Mr. Gone are talking here, and you know, Julie's like, stop this, it hurts, like I don't want to see this. And he's like, yeah, I thought this is what you wanted. Did you see behind the mask? And she's say, how did you know? How did you know about everything? It's like, well, very simple. A part of me is projected into the other world, into your home. I'm there right now listening. So obviously he is, you know, what's in this box. He says, that's how I know that the Outback is getting smaller and smaller while the world of the city is growing. It's all unbalanced. When he spoke to your other selves yesterday, you damaged the barriers. I'd explain more, but you have a nasty habit of cutting off my head when I tell you the truth. So do you want to know why you're so afraid of wet blue? And she just says, shut up, and fucking kills him again. kills tiny Mr.
I love
Bond
a little
again.
Blood spatter when she punches.
There's tiny blood splatter just shooting off, and she just she basically just crushes tiny Mr. Gone again. So once again, Mr. Gone, at least in the Outback, is tiny. It's hilarious. It really is. And then we see, kind of in the Outback version, Max is hopping off this air whale, jumps and is hanging out on this rock with Julie while all these tiny is are around her. But then back in the real world, turns out they're just sitting on a mailbox. So, and Max makes a funny line. He's like, wait, so does that mean I was just riding on a Goodyear blimp this whole time when I thought I was on an air whale? It's just kind of a funny reference to the fact they always show blimps and air whales at the same time. Obviously, he wasn't really riding on a blimp. Or was he? I have no fucking idea. But that's what makes the Max fun and weird. Just so happens Sarah is there because she was just there, you know, trying to figure out things with her horse. I gave up on that and came by Julie's apartment maybe to pick up that fucking weird talking box she left there. She and Julie's like, she's kind of helping Julie down. She's like, man, I think I almost killed somebody. She's like, yeah, sure you did. Whatever. When you're feeling better, I want to tell you about this horse. And she's like, horse? What about this horse? And then, where's
Pitt?
Pitt's just gone. He took off. In the real world, he fell out the wind. Tiny Pitt fell out the window.
Right.
But yeah, that's just it. And then basically at the end here, we see some close-ups of this box. So we have an idea that Mr. Gone is in this box somehow, or some aspect of Mr. Gone is in this box. And then we get one more page of Julie, and she is back one more time, sitting by this real horse sculpture, thinking and talking. And she's just saying to herself, like, you know, so here I am again, Mr. Ed. This is the third week. Every week she's been coming back to this horse. Suddenly it happens. In a single voice, the horse's voice reveals everything. It's not about the clay or a horse. It's not about anyone in school, mom, dad, Julie, or even the Max. Oh God, I feel like
Sarah. It's Sarah.
What did I call her?
He called her Julie.
Oh yeah, it's Sarah. Yeah. Oh God, I feel like my insides are burning, turning to jelly. I'm starting to shake, letting my guard down too fast. I need time. It's too much ripping right through me. Maybe that's why I'm crying. It's all so real now. It's all so real. So this horse spirit creature or whatever has also revealed some truths to Sarah as well. All of which will become more clear as we proceed down through the Max, but we will not be proceeding down the Max any further today, because that's all we've been tasked with by Jeffrey, to look at the Max. This is the maximized version, which I think was just recolored volume 2 with issues 5 to 8. So that being said, let's just dive right in. Remzo, let's get your thoughts.
Volume 1 really raised my standard for how I was going to grade things, you know, overall many, many episodes later up until now. It captures a lot of that same fun that I remember from the first volume, but it doesn't quite meet all those areas. I'm going to definitely say the artwork is probably my favorite part about it. And I get a little bit frustrated because it's like you could see so much work went into the layouts, went into how he's changing his style, depending on where the story is taking it. I got to give the story a 4.5 because even by today's modern standards, it's still remarkably better than so many other books that are out on the stands right now. You know, it wasn't just better than a lot of the stuff on the stands then. It is genuinely just so much better than what we have today. And you'd think that, you know, artists would try harder now since more people are into this genre, but that doesn't always seem to be the case. So I'm giving the art a 4.5. The story was still really fun. I really enjoyed it. It feels very true into itself, even when they bring in other characters like Savage Dragon for a quick appearance, or Mako, as we saw for a whole issue. And even with Pit, I think the Pit subplot was kind of all over the place. I wasn't a big fan of it, but I mean, I love the Max. Julie is always just such a fun character. I'm giving the story a 4 out of 5. I'm giving it a total score of an 8.5 out of 10.
Not too shabby. I'm pretty close with you here. And, you know, again, to start with the art, I mean, I've been spent this episode praising Sam Keith. I actually think he's one of the most underrated artists. Like, I'm only back and forth on 4.5 or 5. And I can't really argue with the 5. I'm trying to find a flaw. I'm trying to find something that I would knock it down for. To me, this is so unique, so perfect. And even with such a crazy story and so many things happening, I'm never confused about what's going on, which to me really speaks strongly to the art, because this is the kind of crazy story where so many different things are happening. They're bouncing between the real world, different scenes. Oh, are we in the Outback? Are we not? And it still always visually, it's always visually unique. And he always does really interesting things with the different panels, with the different art styles he incorporates, but it always just works seamlessly. And I think that's just something that's so incredible. I mean, the fact that in the same issue, we saw these like beautifully, like almost like painted drawings of these like horse creatures. And then we also see this cartoony version of the Max. I'm just extremely
impressed.
There was
the Dick Turkey thing.
The Dick Turkey. I mean, I think I'm going to give the art a 5. Like, I'm finding no flaws with this personally, as far as my standards go. So I give the art a 5. I'm going to use the Remzo standard a little bit as far as the writing goes. Like, this isn't, well, I don't know. Is it good for new readers? Like, is the Max ever good for, is issue 1 any more good for a new reader? Probably not. And it's not the writing's fault if you started at issue 5. So I don't think I can really knock it for being any more confusing than it already is and it's supposed to be, because that's kind of what this is. It's supposed to be crazy. It's supposed to be weird. It's supposed to be like, wait, we're supposed to be questioning, like, wait, what's happening in the Outback? Is it really happening? But that's like part of the fun of this, is like figuring out what's going on, what these things really mean, what the meaning of the Outback is and what these different things represent. And like, it's the kind of story you could not think too much about. You could just have fun with it and take the slapstickiness of it, or you could kind of delve into the deeper psychological like topics coming, you know, that are brought up here. And there's just so much here. There's so much depth to it. I find myself talking my score up as I speak to you live. I think the only knock I'm going to give is that, I don't know, maybe like a lot, I feel like maybe a lot of time was wasted with just running away from Mako. Like, maybe something with more substance could have been done there.
Like, there was a lot more filler in this one.
It felt little more fillery, but it was like still fun filler. So I don't want to knock it down too much for that. So I'm going to give the writing a 4.5, and that brings me to a total of 9.5 for this run of the Max. I am freaking loving the Max, and I loved it that back then, and I'm loving this chance, and I'm loving doing this show, which is giving me the impetus to go back and read stuff that I don't know if I would have. I'd like to think eventually I'd go back and read it, but you know, doing this show, thanks to you, thanks to Jeffrey, thanks to all our patrons, I am pushed towards rereading this stuff, and I'm really, really enjoying it. So I think out of all the comics I've revisited that I used to love as a kid, I'm enjoying the Max the most, because it really is a revisit, and it's really
it's almost like a diamond in the rough.
That's definitely, it is the diamond in the rough for sure. So that brings us to a total SPC score for the Max volume 2 to 18. Yeah. Wait, no, you gave it 8.5? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. 18, which is stellar. It's about as good as you can fucking get around here. So, I mean, this is obviously a very highly recommend. I would, of course, recommend I would not start at issue 5. Doesn't necessarily make it less confusing, but I would still start at issue 1 so you have some idea of who these characters are. But yeah, I mean, this is an absolute recommend.
Yeah. This is definitely one of those books where it's like, I would have never picked it up had we not done this show. And I know that you and I had discussed wanting to eventually get back to volume 2, continuing the story, especially since it is a shorter series. I think it got less than 20 issues in print, and a Max and Friends
like
spinoff
or something like that. Yeah.
It was only a couple of years in terms of publication, but, you know, thank you, Jeffrey, for picking this. I know it is your, you know, one of your favorite stories, but I really was just happy that someone was like, you know, we got to keep this going, because I sure as hell enjoyed it. A year later, I'm still loving, you know, following up with the story.
Indeed. Same thing. So we already pretty much plugged the Patreon pretty heavily. I don't think we need to go back to that. So I will just thank you all for being here. Thank you for being with us from the beginning. Next week, we're going to do something a little different. Again, the fourth Wednesday of the month is usually our potpourri, where we talk pop culture, TV, movies. We are going to do that, but in a slightly different format. We're going to do an SPC, the first ever SPC year-end awards. I'm very excited, Remzo. Are you going to dress up in a tuxedo or what?
I mean, there's got to be champagne at minimum. Oh, we're going to have to go
literally drink
out.
Champagne. I will. Yes. The thing is, the problem is I'm in Mexico. Champagne is really hard. There's no cheap champagne here. Like the cheapest champagne
get
is like
some tequila
bucks.
And Sprite.
Yeah, I'll get something sparkly. All right. Let's put it that way.
That works.
Something I pretend is champagne. But yeah, I think the only thing I would ask, you know, is if you are a fan of this program, if you enjoy what we do, just take a minute out of your day. 2 minutes max. Head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and a great review there. That just does wonders for us, for the algorithm, for more people finding us when they search for comic book podcasts and that sort of thing. So that's the easiest, simplest way, and cheapest way you can help us out. Remzo, any last words?
Folks, be good, be great. And as always, just remember, if there's nothing else you do, there's one thing we can all do together. It's read comics! And change the world.
Change the world.
Good night, America.
Adios.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.